The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, and welcome back. Hope you had a good day today. It's awfully dry here. I have a little bit of a frog in the throat, as they say. George Filer is going to join us tonight, the first hour. George and a couple of friends. And we're going to have a little fun to get away from some of the angst and grief that's surrounding this planet. So let's say hello to, well, he's the man who puts Filer's files together every week. And we should remember to tell you, you can get a free subscription to Filer's Files simply by asking George, and we'll tell you how to do that a little bit later. Hello, Mr. Filer, a Major Filer. How are you, sir?
I'm fine.
Good.
Everything's great out here on the East Coast. A little rain, but it turned into a nice day today.
Yeah, it's hot.
28 degrees.
Hot and dry here, I'll tell you that. Of course, we're in a drought on the West Coast. That's a long story, but doesn't... Now they're talking about a 30-year drought cycle.
Oh, my.
That'll pretty well finish off the West Coast and turn it into the Sahara Desert of the U.S. If there's no more water. It's gone. The snowpack is gone. It's gone. So, not good. We will see. So, what have you planned for us tonight, my friend?
Well, we have a couple guests. You want to go into that directly?
No, let's get caught up to speed here and make sure we're running right. What's new? Anything you want to report?
Obviously virtually thousands of UFO reports around the country. People don't realize that there's so many going on. But we have particularly interesting one that occurred on July 13th in Joplin, Missouri. And our guests tonight are the chief investigator, who is also the assistant state director for MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, and Margie Kay. And we have people who witnessed a huge craft over Joplin, John Cruzan. And I don't know if his wife is with tonight, but Tracy Cruzan as well. Both saw the craft, and they're going to tell us, their eyewitness accounts about it, and some information concerning the investigation.
And Margie is involved with the investigation,
right?
So this is kind of her case, as it were.
Right.
Very good.
I'm the Eastern MUFON director, but
now this is
one of the best cases we've had for a while.
Yeah. The triangle sightings continue to pop up frequently, and they don't seem to be going away, and they don't seem to be coming any less shy in showing themselves either. I don't know where this one is. We'll find out. But we've had how many reports, George, of these things flying right over urban areas? I mean, low enough that a drunken deer hunter could cause some serious trouble.
Well, we had a couple thousand reports last month between Peter Davenport and MUFON. And one of the interesting reports was that we lost an F-15 over Virginia.
Yeah, very strange circumstances. Yep.
And any case, a triangle UFO was seen there. So there are many of these reports going on, and we feel should be investigated. It's interesting that the Air Force for 20 years investigated these sightings, and at least publicly they claim they don't investigate them anymore. Matter of fact, some people call the Air Force and they tell them to call them me or Peter or whatever. But I think that the country should be investigating these kind of reports, that they are significant.
Well, I don't know how much cooperation we're going to get, or you're going to get, or anyone's going to get from the Air Force, but this was a very well-experienced pilot. Apparently, he was a pilot who trained younger pilots, among other things, and this plane came down from a very high altitude. He had more than ample time to exercise the very simple procedure to eject himself from that aircraft.
Well, unfortunately, some of these aircraft are getting a little old, and sometimes they disintegrate, so it's hard to tell exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
He did report, the Lieutenant Colonel reported that he had an emergency, so something was going on before he crashed in the mountains of Virginia.
Why is it that that's all we ever hear, that somebody reports, well, I'm having some kind of an emergency? A professional, and you know this, would be very specific. I'm having problems with my, or this isn't working, or something, wouldn't they?
Well, depends how much time you have, and also the government usually doesn't reveal a lot of these types.
Well, I understand that, but it makes it sound kind of weird, like they're covering something up, and maybe it's national security, I don't know. But sad in any case, and not much left of the aircraft to study. So,
right. Unfortunately, crashes pretty well tear up an airplane. And this, I guess, went pretty much straight in.
Yeah, yeah.
This occurred on, I guess, August 29th, fairly recent, and was part of the National Guard out of Boston.
Well, I don't know what to say, except we lost two planes over the Western Pacific as well, and I'm not sure. I think they recovered one of the aviators, but the other was missing.
Yeah, we've done the best of the family.
Indeed. Always, always. Okay, well, why don't you go ahead and let's have you introduce Margie, and then we'll get from there right into the story. We'll bring on
Marty
John.
Marty Kay is the Assistant State Director for MUFON, a field investigator in Missouri. And she's been investigating this case for several weeks now, and it has a lot of interesting aspects to it. So we'll just say hello to Margie. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi.
Hi, Margie.
Thanks.
Thanks for being here. Now, have you been on before, Margie?
Yes.
Last month we talked about this case in some detail.
Mm-hmm.
And
you sound different. I'm sorry. You have a different sounding voice. You're on a different phone this time, and it kind of threw me.
So. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah,
it's
I am on a different phone.
Yeah, it's It's good. It's fine. Don't worry about it. All right. So we're going to pick it up from where we were last time. And I remember that I had asked if you could get this person to come on because it was such a stunning case. And I'm glad you were able to do that. And we're indebted to John. And we'll meet him in just a minute. And we can put his wife on, too, if we have time for that. So how did you find out, Margie, about these events? Who contacts you? Who assigns you cases? This is a national organization, for those of you who don't know, the Mutual UFO Network. And they are basically the boots on the ground. They go out and do the work, talk to the people, take the measurements, take pictures, and document as much as they can. So how do you get notified?
Well, Jeff, usually people find MUFON.com after they do a search trying to find out where to report their UFO sighting. A lot of people don't really know about MUFON, and so that's how they find it, or they may ask somebody, and I believe that was the case in this case. Mr. Cruzan asked a friend or a family member, and they informed him about the MUFON website. And, of course, that is the international website, and then the case gets assigned to the state, and the state director then assigns it to someone in the area. And I happen to be the closest person, even though I'm in Kansas City and Joplin is 2.5 hours south. This was a big enough case, I could tell from the beginning, that I wanted to be there myself anyway.
Sure.
So I took another investigator with me, Larry Jordan from Kansas, who assists me several times on cases. And we went down and visited with Mr. and Mrs. Cruzan, as well as the third witness. And this is just one of the biggest cases we've ever handled. Amazing event and very, very credible witnesses.
Well, it sounds like one of the premier events in recent memory anyway. You want to? We should have John online now, Margie. You want to go ahead and introduce John, and we'll pick it up and hear the story.
Sure. Well, this is John Cruzan. He is an ex-police officer, and he is a pilot. He is the second person to see the UFO after he was flagged down by his neighbor, who was a commercial pilot. And John had his wife, Tracy, with him, and I'll let him tell his story.
Okay. John, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Thank you for being here. You are a professional pilot, amateur, but a professional law enforcement officer, I guess retired now.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't play games.
No.
You have a way of looking at life that most Americans don't. This is something that would require a certain commitment within you, I would think, to drive you to come forward and be on this radio show or even talk about it, because it's something that most people would rather avoid. But we're very much indebted to you, especially because of your background, for stepping forward. So thank you in advance.
You're welcome. Glad to do it.
All right. So tell us where you were, what time of day it was, and what the sky looked like, and what was going on.
Well, it was about 9:15, something like that. We were on our way home.
So it's dark.
It was just getting dark. It was at sunset.
Okay.
And, you know, kind of a reddish sky from where the sun was just going down. Came around the corner to come up to my street. So just a small cul-de-sac. And my neighbor, who I didn't know at the time, was standing out in the street with a dog, just jumping up and down and pointing and waving, and I didn't know what was going on. He jumped right out in front of my car. And so I stopped and jumped down and asked what was wrong, and he pointed up, and I looked up, and when I looked up, what I saw was just this black thing, just enormous thing, just overhead.
Now, you're talking about looking almost straight up?
Just pretty much straight up, yeah.
Okay.
And what I got to see was the back end of it as it went across the street. And from there, we looked at it from the rear view of it as it went off to the horizon. And it was just, it's hard to explain how big it was. And I felt like I could have thrown a rock and hit it. It was just treetop level, basically.
Okay. Rock throwing distance is enough to scare the daylights out of people. How was your emotional response? Being a former law enforcement officer, you've seen it all.
Yeah, wasn't
how did
really
this
scared.
Impact you? Okay.
I didn't feel scared. It just kind of defies reality. It's just something that just kind of, you know, how can this be, you know? Mostly I was just trying to figure out exactly what am I looking at here. How can this be? I don't hear anything. I don't feel anything. There's no sound. There's no wind. There's nothing. You know, what is this? It's more just a disbelief at first.
In other words, you looked up at it and you went into a part of your mind that said, wait a minute, there's nothing in my file here for this.
Exactly. Yeah, if I'd have been alone, mm-hmm. I probably went and got a CAT scan the next day or something, thought I had a brain tumor or something.
That's funny.
But, you know, we're looking at it, I mean, I had no words. I wanted to just say, oh, that's just something, but there's nothing there. There's nothing to identify it with. It made no sense at all. But there it was.
Let's try and describe how big this object was. Now, it's just getting dark. You're able to see the hardness between the corners of this. Did it have the usual lights on the corners? Most of them have lights on each of the three tips.
They were all around the bottom of it, all around the edge.
Oh, so it completely, more or less wrapped it around
alternated orange and red lights all the way around the edge of it.
All
and
three
in the middle, there were like little blue lights and white lights. And
oh, you got the deluxe model.
I guess.
So most of them just have a white light on the three tips and another light in the center on the bottom, which sometimes is red, sometimes is orange,
yeah.
Sometimes is white. Those are the traditional descriptions. This sounds like almost a Christmas tree light display.
There was lots of lights
all the way around. Was it an equilateral triangle?
It was really kind of a teardrop shape. It's like the front was pointed. It's kind of a teardrop shape, but the back end of it was flat.
Okay, so it wasn't so much of a pointed three-sided triangle as much as an elongated, kind of more aerodynamic. Looking
kind of a teardrop shape.
And
the back end of it wasn't sharp corners, they were rounded.
Uh-huh. What color
and
was it?
It was black.
Okay, black.
Kind of a gray, dark gray to black, something like that, you know.
So you'd call it a satin or a flat, not a gloss.
Just a flat, very flat color.
Okay. The lights themselves, equally spaced all the way around the perimeter?
Right.
And the two colors only that you mentioned?
All the ones around the edge were orange or red. They alternated.
They were flat. And when you say alternated in position, orange, red.
In position.
Were they solidly?
Like an orange light, then a red light, then an orange light, then a red light, all the way around.
Were they constantly illuminated, or did they do any flashing?
No flashing. They were all constant.
Mm-hmm.
And then inside of that, there were just a few randomly spaced, well, not randomly, maybe three or four white lights. In the middle, there was a big white light. And then around that, there was a whole bunch of little tiny blue lights.
That actually sounds kind of pretty.
Yeah, I guess it was, really. It was interesting.
All right, so you could have thrown a rock and hit this thing.
Yeah.
So let's try and come up with a size. What's your best guess? You've estimated distances and all kinds of things in law enforcement, from traffic accidents to throwing objects and whatever. So
right.
you've got a good mind for this.
We came up with an acre because out where we live in this neighborhood, the minimum lot size is 1 acre, and it covered one whole housing lot, and that's how we came up with that size.
1 acre.
Mm-hmm.
Flying over your head at treetop height,
right.
How fast would it have been moving?
Well, it seemed to be moving slow, but if you take the amount of time it took from being overhead to being at the horizon, it was only maybe 15 to 20 seconds.
Okay.
So doing the math, that came out to be, you know, maybe 70 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour. But
no,
something
no,
that big, it doesn't seem that fast.
Well, the whole thing is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Did you recall any noise at all?
No. In fact, we even mentioned it while it was going over that, you know, I said to the other witness, I said, I can't hear anything. Can you? He said, no, nothing. It was absolutely just silent. I mean, we could hear the crickets in the trees. We could hear dogs barking all over the place. Every dog in the neighborhood just went nuts, like they do when a police siren goes by or something.
Sounds like exactly that. Sometimes reports are that everything goes silent.
Yeah.
So in this case, it didn't.
No.
The other witness, a commercial pilot.
Mm-hmm.
You're an amateur pilot, meaning you don't fly commercially.
Right.
Both of you recognize a machine when you see it.
This
was a machine of some kind.
Absolutely.
As the back end passed, did you see any visible signs or hints of a propulsion system on the back end of it?
Nothing. We couldn't tell anything. We couldn't smell anything. We tried to smell fuel or smell, you know, as if you've been around an airport much, as aircraft fly over, you can usually smell the exhaust or smell the fuel pretty strong.
Sure.
We couldn't smell anything. There was nothing.
Wow. George, step in here. This is an astonishing event.
Well, Jan Harrison, who's the international director, called me today, and we were discussing this object. And an acre is very large, you know, 43,000 square feet.
Square feet, yep.
The point is that it's much larger than any known aircraft that I'm familiar with flying in our skies. So then the question, is it ours or is it somebody else's? And our discussion was that, let's assume it was some kind of experimental aircraft. The point being is that it's unlikely to fly at that level, very close to the ground, where many people can look at it and so on. So then you come to the conclusion it's more than likely from outer space or another dimension or something like that. In other words, it's not something that the United States has built and flies around to the best of our knowledge. And that's what we're looking at on a regular basis, something that we can't explain and that at least we feel in MUFON that should be examined as best we can and investigated.
Okay, well, you're obviously on it. Stand by just a minute or two. We have to take a little bit of a break, and we'll come right back. This is a big one. Right overhead, former law enforcement officer, two pilots watching this thing at rock-throwing distance. Just amazing. Hold on. We'll be right back. Talking to John. And John, spell your last name for me.
C-R-U-Z-A-N.
John Cruzan, or is it Cruzan?
Cruzan's right.
Cruzan, okay. Now, this craft, black, with the lights on it, I've been trying to paint a picture of it in my head. Have you had anybody digitally try to reproduce this on a computer for you?
No, huh?
Okay, it might be something you'd want to consider doing.
Can I...
Go ahead, George.
Interject here?
Yeah, sure.
Jeff?
You bet.
A
Well, most Americans are familiar with the football field, American football field.
You bet.
Well, an acre is just slightly smaller than that football field. To give you an idea of the size of the object that they saw flying over.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good indication that...
yeah, just imagine a football field flying overhead in the
right.
shape of a... rather a teardrop, not a an equilateral triangle. This again, George, demonstrates what we've said so many times. There are innumerable, countless different shapes and sizes and variations of flying machines all over this planet that people see and report all the time. It's not like, well, we've had a breakthrough and we've got one or two or three different types that we fly around, like the TR-3B, which is allegedly a triangular-shaped gravity-minimizing craft. Let's just do it that way. This is far beyond that. And then the other side, John, which George and I, and I'm sure Marge has talked about, I think we may have talked about this last time, Marge, if you, Major Filer, were in charge of a $1 trillion ultra black ops program to develop anti-gravity craft, which are aerodynamically sleek enough to enter and exit the Earth's atmosphere, which this one sounds like it was, you'd have to. Would you fly it over at treetop level over an urban area? Would you give your officers on board and commanding personnel instructions? Go ahead, fly it right over downtown Akron at 9 o'clock at night.
Obviously, they wouldn't.
That's right.
And the fact that it's quiet, I mean, we can't even get our cars quiet, much less an object of this size.
Now, let me ask John another question. John, if you had, an AR-15, just because most people know what they are. You would have had no trouble emptying a clip or two in that, would you?
Probably not. I mean, I could have if I wanted to. I don't know if I really would have.
Yeah, well, it may not be nice to mess with things like that.
Yeah.
But my point is, there are a lot of people, there are no laws against it. I'm not encouraging it. I wouldn't do it. We remember, George and I and Marge, that Frank Fraschino wrote a book documenting and detailing the U.S. Air Force issuing orders to shoot them down in 1953-54, and that didn't go over too well. We lost, apparently, a couple hundred at least aviators, scores of aircraft, until the orders were rescinded, and then they used gun cameras instead of guns, and then the crashes and disappearances apparently pretty well stopped. Were you... You live in obviously a busy area.
Mm-hmm.
Were you surprised that this didn't make an enormous splash in the community? Was it on the local news at all, even an indirect or weak report?
There really wasn't anything about it. In fact, I was surprised no one else saw it.
Well, maybe someone did. We don't know that. But a lot of people are so scared, or, as I said earlier, there's nothing in their mental file that can overlay this, and they just walk away. They don't want to process it.
Well, Jeff, if I could interject.
Please, go ahead, Marge. Yeah.
I did issue a press release, and after that, we did receive 5 more reports from other witnesses in the area, and these were all large craft, except in one case. And they're all, interestingly, within a mile to mile and a half from this event.
That's extraordinary. I know, about the same time?
They all occurred between July 13th and August 27th.
Oh, so it wasn't the same night?
It was not the same night. It seems to be ongoing. We may have a flap going on down there.
Well... this is an extraordinary event. Closest airport, John, to you?
It's probably about 10 miles away.
And they have radar?
I don't know if they have radar or not. I think they do. I did call out there, and they told me they didn't have anything in that area on radar for that time.
Well, they're instructed not to tell you anything.
Yeah, they acted like they didn't even really check.
Right.
This is something that, obviously, now we have 5 different days, Marge?
Yes, indeed. And then with this one, that's 6 days.
Yeah.
My goodness. Something about your town, John, that whatever this is, finds...
That's what we try to figure out is what's there that is interesting to them. You know, there's nothing there.
Do you happen to have any underground caverns that you're aware of in the area?
Not that I'm aware of.
We've had
now,
similar cases where craft were seen, and they seemed to go into the ground. And we, you know, tried to figure out what was going on. It was in a large farming field. This was in Ohio. In any case, we found out that there was a large cavern underneath this field. Of course, we couldn't, and we had videos and pictures of what appeared to be craft coming out of that field and going into it.
Well, this one, they thought actually landed in a cow pasture, a field not far from them, and they chased it.
Who's they?
John and the other witnesses.
Oh,
you want to tell them about that, John?
Tell me more, John, please. Oh,
yeah,
John, we have, hold on, please. We have another short break right now.
Okay.
I didn't know this. This is even more interesting. Quick question. Did you have a feeling that you might want to call 911 at any point?
No, I really didn't.
Okay. Well, we read into that what you'd like, folks. All right, we'll be right back in a couple minutes. Okay, we're back with eyewitness John, who has lived through something that... did you ever think you'd see anything like this in your life, John?
No, I really did not.
What is your general position on the subject of UFO, unidentified flying objects? You're a pilot.
I always thought people were probably just misidentifying things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of people reporting, somebody has to be seeing something.
Yeah. Now, how do you feel about that?
Well, I feel a little differently. I think, you know, I know I saw something. I don't know what it was, but...
Well, you didn't see something. You saw something gigantic.
Yeah.
That could have stopped a pacemaker in some people. Tell us what happened about chasing this.
Well, we saw it go to the horizon, and then it turned its lights off and went straight down behind the trees. It looked like it was landing, so...
Oh, really? The lights just went off?
Just turned them off like they flipped a switch.
Oh,
and
my.
And then it lowered down behind the trees. And so we jumped in my Jeep and took off, because I knew right where that was. And we headed there fast as we could. When we got there, by now it's pretty dark out, and just as we approached the field, I had one of those spotlights, you know, that you plug into your cigarette lighter. And we were shining it, looking around, shining, you know, off in the trees and around the fields. And we got to this one field all of a sudden the light didn't work anymore and the Jeep stopped. And the beeper in the dash that beeps when your seatbelt's not on or something, you know, it starts beeping. It goes beep, 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 just really fast. And kept doing that, and I couldn't get the Jeep to go anywhere, and we were stalled there. The light, you could see the light was on, but the beam doesn't shine anywhere, and we couldn't see anything. And we sit there for a few minutes.
Wait, wait, wait. The light was on, but the beam didn't...
You could look into the light and see that it's on and it's working, but when you shined it out into the field, it wouldn't shine on anything. There was no beam. You could put your hand out there, and it didn't shine on your hand.
A black hole.
It's just unreal. I couldn't believe it. We were messing with it and looking at it, trying to figure out what was going on.
That is wild, yeah.
I opened the door of the Jeep and stood up on the running boards and stood up over the top of it and tried to look around. Couldn't see anything. And then finally the Jeep moved forward to a point where it started running again. The light started working again.
When you say it moved forward, what do you mean? Did it just, you were in it and it rolled forward?
We were just coasting along. We were just rolling.
I see.
But when it got to a point, everything worked fine again. So we went about a mile down the road and turned around and came back. We came back to the same spot. The exact same thing happened again in the same place.
Is it possible where you were, was there enough open space to have accommodated this craft on the ground and yet you couldn't see it?
Yes, that was why we were heading there, because there's a huge field there that we knew that if anything was going to land, that's where it would go. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing around there that gives you enough room to land something that big. And that was exactly where this happened. We turned around and came back. It happened again. The third time we went back to try it, and everything worked fine. Then it didn't happen anymore. It was really a strange thing.
This is an event from a major motion picture.
Well, we actually said this like the movies or something, you know?
Yeah, sure. Did you go back in the daylight to this field? I'm sure Margie's been there.
Oh,
Marge,
yeah.
Did you go out and walk the field? Are you still there, Marge? Okay, maybe we lost Marge. George,
I went back the very next morning as soon as it was daylight. I was back out there. And I couldn't see anything unusual.
Nothing. Been fun if you'd had your neighbor had had a Geiger counter. Did you go out with your neighbor, the other eyewitness?
Mm-hmm.
What was his state of mind? What did he have to say the next day about this? Because when you saw him, you said he was jumping up and down.
Yeah. He was just in disbelief like I was. We were both pretty excited about it. I don't think either one of us slept that night.
I wouldn't. Now, being a former police officer, I asked you about 9/11, and you said no. What would a police officer do in a situation like that? Do they like to go to those kind of calls?
Not typically, no. What do you do? You can write a report, and that's about it. There's nothing comes of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's not really anything to investigate. In fact, we would tell them to call someone like MUFON or something like that.
Very good. Okay. All right. Anything you want to add to this? Just a terrific, unforgettable story.
Wow. Well, after that, I don't know how related it was. We noticed the next morning that I had a burn on my arm. We don't know where it came from.
Where on your arm?
On my, it was on my right shoulder, really.
Through your clothing?
Yeah, no, I had a short sleeve shirt on. It was just below the sleeve, just below where the sleeve is.
Kind of like a sunburn?
Yeah, it's a perfect square, but it was bleeding. It was blistered up and bleeding, so we don't know.
A perfect square?
Yeah.
That, George, would almost suggest that he had been beamed, perhaps, by that craft.
And then later following that, I had the worst stomach flu I've ever had in my life for about 3 weeks. And went to the doctor. They couldn't find anything wrong with me. Had no viruses or anything.
Well, that's suggestive of radiation poisoning.
That's what everybody thought, but I didn't die from it, so.
No.
If it was, it wasn't that bad.
No. George, go ahead. You had something to say.
Well, we've had other cases with similar results, as a matter of fact, too.
I went up to Pine Bush with some other investigators, and we came back with, I don't know if you call them burns, but it looked like it'd been out in the sun and got sunburned. That's what ours would look like.
Yeah. Just really, like the worst sunburn you've ever seen.
Like,
it was really bad. I saw it. It was blistered up.
Yeah, it was blistered and bleeding.
How do you get a beam that leaves a square? Yeah. Beams aren't usually square. That's a very odd thing. Go ahead, Marge.
I was just going to say we're thinking laser or microwaves.
Well, even so, a square is still unusual, but doable.
Yeah, a doctor told me that it resembled a laser burn that he had seen when he was in the Army.
Huh. Well, there you go. Okay, we only have about 4 minutes left. Marge, what would you like to say here in summation on this? And then we'll say goodnight to John here in a couple minutes.
Well, you know, this is one of the best cases I've had because you've got three very credible witnesses of extremely close encounter with something that's very unexplained and evidence. You know, so many things happened that can't be explained with it. And then the fact that we've got five more witnesses that saw a large craft close to the ground or at treetop level, you know, the next month, 5 weeks after that, it's extremely odd, and it's something that we're going to keep a close eye on. In fact, I'm going back down there to take some more readings in the area and check the vegetation to see if there's was anything, mm-hmm. any lasting effects.
Do you have a Geiger counter?
Yes, I do, and I'm going to be using that too.
Good. You might want to check John's vehicle and just hold it over him, his arm, where the burn was, just for the heck of it. Any clothing he was wearing at that time. If you have a black light, you know that drill.
Oh, yeah.
So
we're going to do all of that.
Good, good. The other cases that came in, how similar were they? They were all right down on the deck, close like this?
Very close, except that each description of the craft is different. One was a disc. One was a disc with a wedge cut out of it. Another was a rectangle, and in one case there was no craft seen, but an event happened to the vehicle that just sounded so much like typical UFO sightings that I went ahead and took the report, and that is another story in itself.
Oh, you want to come back again, do you? I see.
I'll send you a report. This is just never ending.
The witnesses for these others, I would be game to have a couple of them on too. Now you're telling me that you have a total of six reports, and were there any two of them that had identical craft, or what would
no.
appear to be? All right, now this is right over the top. That's amazing.
Well, the thing about craft is, you know, with UFOs, you can look at it from a different position and get a different perspective. So one person might say it's a triangle, another one might say it's a disc.
Thoroughly understand. Yeah. A disc can be a cigar if it's looked at on edge, et cetera.
So
yeah.
Whether it is the same craft or not, I don't know, but it's extremely odd to have that many reports of large craft that are close, with close encounters.
Well, Marge, thank you very much for making this possible. Let me right now thank John. John, thank you, sir, very much. You've made a major contribution. There are an awful lot of people out there, many who are listening, who have seen things, perhaps not as spectacular as yours, who have never talked about it, not even with their spouses. So thank you. It helps.
My pleasure.
All right. You be well.
I will mention that this
case will be in my files that people can get free at Major Star at Verizon.net.
Stole my thunder. I was just going to do that.
Right.
All right. If you want a free copy of George's wonderful Filer's Files, just email him at Major, M-A-J-O-R, Star, and he is, Major Star at Verizon.net. Correct?
And if there's any scientists out there who can explain why a flashlight will not show a beam.
Project a beam.
That's something we don't understand, at least I don't.
Nope. Okay. Thank you, Margie. And look, we'll, if you can get some more folks in this ongoing, we'll call it a flap, let me know. Let George know.
I will do so.
Okay. Thank you very much, Margie.
Thank you.
Major, thank you. Wonderful job. Extraordinary
You're
things
welcome.
Going on all over the place, and we appreciate everything. All right. If you can come up with some more on this, let me know, and we'll have you back. Take care, George.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Good night.
Keep looking up.
Always. Okay. There's our number one, and we will continue with more in just a few minutes.